Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. Super quick announcements. We added a second show at San Diego Comic-Con, Saturday, July 23rd at 11 p.m. Our guests are Kevin Pereira and just added the Riff Tracks guys. Kevin Murphy, Bill Corbett, and Michael J. Nelson will be there, so please come by. Also, there may be some other surprises. Tickets are available, of course, at Nerdist.com. Also, we'll be performing at Just for Laughs Montreal on Friday, July 29th. I think the show's at midnight. It's late, but you can go to hahaha.com to get tickets and info for that also. All right, here we go. The Nerdist Podcast, episode number 108 with Zachary Levi.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
And he does the whole thing, and he goes to open the bottle, but he had the sparkling water, it got so. And then he puts it in his mouth to keep it from fizzing over, and it's just I was just coughing on fizz. It's so genius.
I gotta rewatch this. I watched it really passively.
Talking to the microphone.
Oh, where are we?
Oh yeah, I already started recording.
Oh, we're already going?
Yeah, that's how it works.
That's how we do.
I just start. I don't care. There's no formal. This isn't radio.
That was a new one from Sublime with Rome. Now we're sitting here with Zachary Levi.
Yeah.
Meta on this Sublime. Those guys are great.
I hope you bought your cum pants because you're going to need them.
Cum pants?
I don't know. I guess those
are the cuffs. Would just have a lining of sorts? Would that have a lining? I don't.
Yeah, it would have like a cum diaper.
Yeah, they're cuffed at the ankle, so it just all
like ferret legging.
I always assumed it was like a maxi pad with wings or something.
It kind of, but the padding is in the front because you're a boy.
Are you though?
Well, but does it go straight out now like that? I mean, mine kind of hangs down. It would kind of go down into the lower reservoir.
Someone sent me the worst video I've. One of the worst videos I've ever seen. We can't ever show it on WebSoup. But it's a guy with enormous balls, like the size of gourds.
Wait a minute, that was me.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you hear
continue.
And it was just the shot of him literally ejaculating for like 45 seconds. It's the weirdest.
Dropping white ropes.
Dropping white ropes, buddy. Shooting out the pearls.
Going down to Ibiza.
Was it like a draining? Was he trying to get them back to normal size?
It did look like a draining. That would have made it great if it just cartoon like Tex Avery style. They just shrank back down. It was a truly
awful.
Pan over,
there's a guy in a vest and a suit with a slide whistle doing his audio.
I've heard of bloodletting, but I've never heard of
cum letting. Yep.
Yeah.
There's a video that one of the producers, every time they want to show a video that might be a little iffy, they first send them a video of the maggots coming out of a guy's dick.
Uh-huh.
And then they go, no, you can't show this. Well, what about this one? They're like, yeah, that'll be fine. Just not the dick maggot.
Oh, that was the cum shot from Angel.
The infamous Angel.
Vampires have maggots in their balls. Zachary Levi is here on the podcast.
Hello.
I'm so excited.
I'm glad you're here. We've been going back and forth for a while.
It's been a while.
I think the first time I met you was maybe on a Chelsea Lately taping.
And then that was years ago.
Years ago. And then 2 years ago at Comic-Con, I met you while hanging out with the delightful Allison Hayslip, who you're also pals
with.
She's
so delightful.
She's great.
I'm so proud of her, too, man. She's been just, like, kicking it, and she's so talented, and she, you know, and she's a hustler. Like, in this town, you really got to hustle, as you well know. And I remember when she had texted me kind of out of the blue, I don't know, months and months ago. And she's like, do you know anybody? Because, you know, Chuck's on NBC. And she's like, do you know anybody in the world of the, reality stuff? Because I'm going in for a meeting, which then led to being, you know, her gig on The Voice.
Right.
And it's like, I don't know anyone in NBC reality programming, but I'll, you know, see what I can do. And then
that's
she's
a
like,
different, much bigger, more expensive building.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the successful building.
Yeah. They keep the scripted programs on the air.
Yeah. But yeah. And then for her to be like, hey, no worries. I already went in. It went great. And then for her to have the gig on The Voice and, you know, just be killing it. I'm so proud of her, man.
She's great. And just a delight to hang out with.
Yeah. No, she's fun.
A constant delight.
And a true nerd. I love that.
She really is.
to talk video games with anyone, especially a beautiful woman, is quite a delightful experience.
She was the one that has, she's turned me on to quite a few cool video gamey things, and I have turned her on to Doctor Who, which has been a big thing. Are you a Who fan at all?
I'm
don't feel bad if you're
so
not.
Much
it's a very
cred,
specific.
But no, I have not watched any.
No,
Doctor
we have
Doctor
this
Who.
Conversation all the time with Jonah, where people are like, I can't believe you haven't seen this thing, and you're like, there's only so many hours in the day, and I have a job.
Yeah, especially, plus, go ahead. No, please, Jonah. Like, no, you talk.
Yes, you're right. Thank you, guest. Because the same thing. Like these guys are talking about Doctor Who forever, and I didn't see it. You know, and I'm on the fucking show.
Have you seen? You're on Doctor Who.
No, I'm on this show, and like all that, all they did was talk about it. I would just say, I don't want to hear about it because I don't care.
Have you seen it now?
Yeah, now I'm caught up, and now I'm addicted.
Oh, okay. I was almost waiting for that. Yeah, I've seen it, and I still don't care.
Still don't.
No, I've heard it's fantastic. People go crazy for it.
Yeah.
I think obviously when you're working and you know you got a lot of things you got to juggle in your day, it's already you have very little time there. And then there's so many options. You know, there's so many shows on, and there's so many video games to play, and then the internet is this brave new world of all kinds of things to watch, and you know
the inter what? I'm not familiar with this thing you speak
we're
of
on right now.
What
Chris?
Is it?
Al Gore back in '02 created what came to be known.
What's going on with the internet too? By the way, has any more discussion gone on with that? I read something about it in Popular Science a year ago, and it was like Internet 2, the new internet. I'm like, I don't even still understand what Internet 1
is. Net 2.0, is that different?
Well, no, there's like
Web 2.0.
Web 2.0 is just like the
aesthetic
new
thing, right?
Yeah, it's more of an aesthetic.
All right.
It's no pop-ups.
Yeah.
Clean UI.
Everything is a
no frames.
Social interface.
No, not a ton of animated GIFs on the.
Animated GIFs. I sent you one today.
I know. Someone animated a GIF of me breaking a vase doing extreme office parkour.
Oh,
nice!
I know it was very exciting. Your email to me, your subject line said, "You're a GIF," and I wanted to write back and go, "And you're a piece of shit." Like I don't know, it just sounded like an insult. It just sounded like an insult.
That seems like overkill to me.
I think. I would have ate that up.
You would have.
Graphic interchange format.
Oh.
That's what GIF stands for. Anyway, whatever, guys. I know acronyms. So tell me about where are you with Chuck? When you go, what's going on?
Chuck, we will be riding off into the sunset with Chuck this season. It will be the last season. Much to the chagrin of many people, but I always try to encourage them and say, you know, silver lining is we get closure. We get to say goodbye, you know.
I don't have to see any of you again. This has been really miserable.
This has been an incredibly horrible experience. No, man, it's been an awesome journey. And honestly, you know, one of the coolest things about it has just been how we've seen our fans and how they've interacted with the show and really been our lifeblood, you know, specifically at Comic-Con and where they're so well represented and, you know, and fighting for our show. Every year we come back by the skin of our teeth and, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, so much of that is due to their passion and their fight and really smartly too, you know, obviously fan write-in campaigns and all that resonate, but they, at the end of the day, I think networks and studios, you know, they have to make, you know, brass tacks decisions. It's like, this many people watch the show, therefore we get this much money from advertisers. The show costs this much to make, so we just can't do it.
Right.
But our fans, I think going into the third season, I believe it was the third season, you know, our show was on the chopping block yet again. And instead of just doing write-in campaign, they went and they patronized a specific sponsor, which was Subway. And they said, let's do this. And it was all like this grassroots online campaign where they went and it was called the footlong finale campaign. So on the night of the finale or day of the finale, they went and bought, you know, footlong sandwiches and wrote in on the suggestion cards, I'm buying this because of Chuck.
Oh, wow.
And I think that, yeah, I mean, therefore you're telling people, look, we're willing to spend money. You know, we're willing to actually go after your sponsors and make it worth their while to be a part of keeping the show on the air. And I think that was the smartest fan campaign I had ever seen because it actually was about that kind of, you know, almighty dollar, which is unfortunate that
$5. It's
$5 footlong.
First of all, guys, eat fresh. Second of all,
eat fresh. Subway. But at any rate, so it's been an incredible journey with the fans and with our cast and crew, and it really will be a bummer to not, you know, get to go to work with them every day. And it's a really beautiful group of people. But
yeah, like you're said, all very attractive.
We are all very attractive.
But see, Zach, I feel like when the show first started, kind of a geeky looking guy, you know. I feel like Zach's gotten more handsome over the years.
Well, it's also part of the character's arc, right?
Thank you, Jonah.
But I don't know. I'm like, Zach, I really feel like I feel like you could satisfy that slot that Hollywood keeps trying to force Ryan Reynolds into. Hollywood is Hollywood.
You mean Scarlett Johansson?
No!
Listen, no, I don't know, man.
I'm sure Ryan Reynolds is a very nice guy, but it is clear at some point in Hollywood, the Hollywood machine said, God damn it, we are going to make you famous. I don't care how many times. Yeah. People don't go to see these movies.
I like to think every time they put chunky frame glasses on him that they just break. Nothing happens. Not like his face breaks. It's just they don't work on him. They just fall off. He's like, I don't know. I can't do it. Can't do it. Too handsome.
He's far too handsome.
Yeah.
He's an incredible. There was like an Entertainment Weekly or I can't remember. It was some magazine. I think it was an Entertainment Weekly where he was like totally bare chest. He was wearing like swim trunks and like water wings and had like a snorkel or something on. I don't know. And as a totally 100%, you know, I can vouch for my heterosexuality as a man. I walked by some newsstand at an airport, and I literally did a double take, and I looked at it, and I go, I hate you. I hate your chromosomes.
But what was so funny about it was that an article, I think he said something to the effect of like, I don't get the whole me being a sex symbol thing. Like, you're fucking standing in a shower with an 8-pack.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen?
I feel he's got pretty good chops though, as far as comedically.
No, no, he's he's a totally funny dude.
No, he's a talented guy.
He's the full package. That he, one,
isn't it?
He's just so good. Right,
he's a triple threat,
guys. Let's just make this the Ryan Reynolds hour.
I'd like to make a proposal to him.
Ryan Reynolds hour, starring Zach Levi and Chris Hardwick.
I'm telling you, we could do it.
What was Ry doing this week?
Well,
he was spotted somewhere, and we all have to kind of talk in hush whispers like this. He was spotted outside of what was that character on SNL? Who was the guy who's always doing the whole thing about the clerks?
Like, oh, no, that's Mad TV.
No. I totally can't remember. Anyway, now I've blown the joke. What were we talking about? Ryan Reynolds. He was spotted outside of it doesn't matter. He's a talented dude.
He's
worked hard, too. I mean, that guy was like on... He was doing like a Canadian soap opera when he was 16. Like he's been doing it a long time.
He's had
time.
A hard life.
I'm telling you. Television in Canada? Are you crazy?
No, he's a stunning individual and funny. And I mean, I just hope that he finds the right role that makes people kind of go like, oh, okay.
Not the Green Lantern.
Maybe not the, okay. You know, the Green Lantern wasn't his fault. He didn't make the Green Lantern. No. He was just in it. The crappy CG and everything else that happened around that movie had nothing to do with Ryan Reynolds.
He was great in Wolverine.
He was really great in Wolverine.
Dude, but it just bummed me out. I was like, Deadpool's one of my favorite characters in the Marvel Universe. Actually, maybe my favorite villain. And watching that movie unravel and like seeing, I was like, what? Deadpool doesn't do any of these things. He doesn't have katanas that come out of his arms. Yeah.
First of all, he'd never be able to bend his goddamn elbows if he had full katanas in his arm. He'd just be stiff-armed the whole time. Yeah. Did anyone even stop to consider?
No.
What would happen if katanas were in your arms?
It's malleable adamantium, Chris. Okay, it's malleable.
Oh, God, I totally forgot about that. The same way that if someone injects adamantium onto your skeleton, knives form in your hands.
No, they covered the bones that were already there.
Those were knobby.
Those were knobby, but it just kind of compressed them.
They could have cut it down.
They could not have, and they did not if you watched the movie.
Guys.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Ryan Reynolds was spotted outside of...
Oh, my God. What are we doing still here? Why are we still here, Zach?
I had to go back. It's in threes, Chris. It's in threes. I'm going to bring it back one more time later. It won't make any sense.
Wait for a callback.
Should be at the very end. Oh,
Ryan Reynolds callback. The third one is the callback that'll make it the best.
That should be the opening of the Ryan Reynolds Hour with Chris Hardwick as I really
it's the callback, but, Ryan Reynolds.
Going back to, because I tangent, going back to Chuck, we go back to work July 27th and we do 13 episodes. As it is right now, we'll do 13 episodes. And, you know, look, there's always that crazy possibility that they order more. But they did, you know, NBC moved us to Friday nights from our Monday night slot. And we were getting pummeled on Mondays anyway. I mean, there's so much competition there. But we held our own and we did okay. And but I think going to Friday nights, I think it's really just kind of like it's a pasture. It's like, you know, we're going to be there. We're going to wrap up our storyline and our characters and relationships and really give closure for the fans and closure for us. And then we'll make like our
we'll make our Serenity or something. We'll go make our Chuck movie, you know, in a couple of years. I don't know.
I've been on shows like that before where it's just like it's getting to the end and they just kind of move it farther and farther. And all of a sudden they're like, you're on Tuesday. And you're like, what day of the week is that? Exactly. Like, oh, no.
Once you figure that out, let us know.
Wouldn't you like to know?
But you know what?
Yes, I do.
It's so hard to even get a network show on the air, much less have one stay on the air and then have the fans demand that it stay on the air. And so I feel like, you know, it's been an amazing thing that you guys have done. And I feel like I interviewed Yvonne Strahovski once.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say her name properly?
You did.
And I think I scared her a little bit. I think I scared her a little bit.
Did you stick your tongue out?
No.
Did you make any kind of like, you know, sexual innuendos or anything like that?
I did say
you should have.
Have you ever seen a one-eared elephant? I pulled my dick and one ball out. Yeah.
Why did you think you freaked her out?
Because I was interviewing her I was guest hosting Attack at the Show, and she did a voice for this video game,
Mass Effect.
Yes. Yeah. And so there was kind of a sex scene.
Did a voice for this video game? Give me a break.
Okay.
Do I look like Ryan Reynolds to you? Bada bing.
So she did Mass Effect, and then she. And I don't know, I was trying to make jokes about the CG version of her.
Oh, sure.
And it just, you know, sometimes as a comic, you start going down a path and you getting all these warning signs internally of like, you know, I wouldn't, you know, like you have sensors.
Yeah,
Spidey senses. Very finely tuned Spidey senses because you're just used to performing in front of people. I was like, no, don't go on this path. And I, for some reason, that made me go down the path harder.
Mm.
And her reaction, she didn't really play along. It was just more like, what? And I'm like, no, this did not.
Wait. Let me dig deeper.
Yes,
Let's go.
Can you hand me that shovel? I'm just using a trowel now. I really want to make sure to get down to where the real awkwardness lives.
Yes.
But she was very gracious and very kind. And it's one of those things that I always felt bad about.
Oh, I'm sure.
She talks about it, right?
I'm sure she's listening right now and is laughing. Oh, that Chris Hardwick. That wasn't even Australian. No, she
turned it on because we call it Ryan Reynolds Hour.
That's what's it? Yeah, exactly. She's like, what's going on there? I want to listen to that.
Oh, I don't know what's going on.
Is that Rye there?
Rye's in there.
No, she's lovely, man. I think that, you know, perhaps perhaps there was an element of her maybe not getting the joke as you were diving into it. But other than that.
Because it wasn't funny. That was the problem.
Well, you should have just started with that. So the thing was, I wasn't actually funny.
I was not being
But then
funny.
I was surprised that she didn't laugh.
You know what's still funny to me is that you would think, I've worked with a ton of attractive girls in my life, and
yet
still, you're welcome, Jonah and Matt. And yet, I still get uncomfortable around, like, because there, you know, there are attractive girls in life, but obviously, television and film will sort of hand pick the people that you look at and you go, you're not human.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're created in a lab.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I still have this little boy nerd thing inside of me that just gets nervous around.
Oh, dude, I totally hear you. Yeah. I was at some party and Sofia Vergara was there. And but you guys watch Modern Family at all?
Yeah.
It's just so funny. It's so good. Yeah. And I think everyone is incredible on the show. And especially, or maybe not especially, but including for sure, Sophia, where, you know, when I had first heard about her, I was like, oh, you know, it's this beautiful, you know, Latin actress who has a big following where she's from. And now she's, you know, doing Hollywood. And I thought that, you know, that was kind of her whole thing. She was just like a really beautiful woman. And then watching Modern Family, I realized, oh my God, she's incredibly funny too. Like she's got a really good comedic, you know, bone in her. And so I see her at this party, or I think actually somebody had introduced me to her. And I was so freaking nervous, and part of it I think was because of just how ridiculously beautiful she is, but also because she is funny. It's not like she's not like some checked out like, oh, I'm really beautiful and that's it. It's like she actually, you know, is having a conversation and saying things that I'm like,
did you offer to put another comedic bone in her? Come on, you guys.
Listen.
Someone had to say it.
Listen.
Someone had to say it.
I caught it and let it go.
We should have just harmonized right there.
Say it.
That was pretty good. I felt
the
good about that.
The Zactones. This is kind of a fun name droppy thing. I saw you at the season finale of SNL.
Yeah, buddy.
I'd never been. And so I was in New York for that. And then I went.
Isn't that just incredible though? Like,
not only is it incredible, but I was a little starstruck by some of the people.
Dude, I'm telling
that
you.
Were there.
Yeah, I mean, almost no matter how long you work in this town, I think is, as long as you always kind of, you know, have a healthy idea of who you are and what you do and how blessed we are to even be able to, you know, be here talking in the E-building on, you know, microphones that aren't ours or whatever, then when you go to something like that, you go, oh my God, like, I watch these people. I watch them on SNL. Like, Kristen Wiig is a revelation. That chick is so funny. And she's one of the sweetest people I've ever met in my life, too. Like, it's a really amazing dynamic. And then you see all the other people that maybe not aren't even on SNL, that, you know, Sudeikis and all those guys are all incredibly fantastic.
Sudeikis is
and
so great.
So great.
And so nice.
He's incredibly nice, too. Yeah. And I think a lot of really talented people, you know, they get that. That, you know, it's like they're talented and they get to, you know, show that talent to the masses and people appreciate it. But it doesn't make them, you know, idiots. It doesn't make them totally checked out and like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm on SNL. What about it? You know? It's like, no, it's a really cool experience. And then there's all the other people. Like, I, you know, ran into my buddy Zach Quinto. He happened to be there that night and got to catch up with him. And it's just a really surreal experience, isn't it? Like the whole after party and everything, and it's the finale.
Everything was crazy. There were so many insanely famous people in the green room, like Sacha Baron Cohen was in there. Like, just, just look around. And then I turned to my buddy Mike Furman, who was with me, and we were both like, this is so surreal. This is so surreal. I was so glad you were there because it made me feel like, oh, okay, I feel like it's okay for me to be here.
Oh, whoa, whoa, what the hell is that supposed to mean?
Because...
wait, what's that supposed
there
was
so
to
many
mean?
there were so many huge celebrities.
Okay, I get
I'm glad
you,
Zach was there.
I get it, I get
no,
it.
No.
I meant that I knew someone there. Like, it made me feel like, okay, I feel a little more comfortable. And Mike goes, I wouldn't be surprised who fucking ran in the room at this point. And 2 minutes later, Chris Rock runs in and goes, have you guys seen Bob Odenkirk? We're like, hey, sit down the hallway. Again, I felt like I don't belong in this room.
Oh no, dude, right back at you. I was stoked when you guys walked in because but up to that point, I was sitting there kind of by myself and I had just gone on vacation and I had like a mohawk and a beard and some of the people that I actually knew or like worked for NBC that I've known through there were seeing me like, who's this hobo in the green room? What's going on? I was like,
why is he asking for cans?
How'd you get in here?
You got a dollar. You got a dollar.
And then just trying not to...
Like a real punk with a mohawk, asking for money.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get my indie rock career going.
I was trying to be super still, like, maybe no, maybe I won't... Like, I was always worried that I'm going to knock something over and then draw attention.
Yeah, yeah. It's also a weird kind of tension in that room, too, because... You know, like you're watching the show on a television, but it's going on behind us live, you know, on the stage and you're watching the sketches and, you know, you don't know, like, I mean, you know, what's funny, you laugh at what's funny and then it'll come to a commercial break. And then there's just like this really awkward, remember that like dead silence and everyone just kind of stands there. And then the people who are really powerful and know each other, they kind of go into these little side conversations and I would kind of look over at Chris and be like, so. Here we are.
I wanted when here it got silent. TV, I wanted to just go. Hey, Olivia Wilde. she was over in the corner with Mila Kunis.
Yeah,
like what the fuck is happening?
Yeah. It's a totally weird, weird world. But
it's like the Laugh Olympics of celebrities. Just like all of these different people. You're like, you know that person.
Yeah,
and you guys know each other.
The one time I went to an SNL after party, I ended up just I didn't really know anybody. I kind of knew Bill Hader, you know, just a couple people, some writers. And I was just like, I don't know where to go. This is a fancy restaurant. And then I sat at the bar of the restaurant and then like I just started talking to a guy and it was like just the roadie for Spoon. I was like, of course this is the guy that I make buzz
the roadie
with.
For Spoon. Like, that's the pretty guy. Awesome though.
Yeah, no, it was great.
Hasn't like, everybody met the roadie for Spoon?
Everyone's had the roadie for Spoon.
What?
But yeah, we just talked for the rest of the night. Like, yeah, this is crazy, huh? Anyway, so when you
I do love Spoon.
Yeah, they're great.
I saw them play it. I played at Avalon a few years ago with a great band called The Clientele.
The clientele.
I used to call them the clientele until I heard Nick Harcourt interviewing them once. The clientele,
but he just tries to make things sound fancier. That Nick Harcourt.
I guess he does.
I just want to imagine a scenario where you were talking to somebody about music you liked, and like, have you heard the clientele? And out of nowhere, they just smack you across the face.
I'm sorry, Short Eye. I meant Short Eye. Clientele. But that was an insane. I love that I still get nervous around Like, I it just makes me feel nerdy. I get nervous around famous people. I just do.
Doesn't it make you feel real and grounded, too, a little bit? Like,
I feel like a lot of things in my life make me feel grounded. But I feel like there are a lot of external forces that make me feel grounded. By the way,
the rents do.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I swear to God, I have it. No, I'm waiting for a check.
No.
My boss, Ted G4, said the rent's coming.
Just slide it under the door could.
It's like Peter Parker's Russian landlord. Like every time he comes home, rent in the Spider-Man 2. I know you're doing Nerd HQ at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the con within the con.
The con within the con. It's Inception 12. Deep. It's like Ocean's 12. Wow. Yes.
So
and I would be Andy Garcia.
Fantastic.
If you spend 10 years in Nerd HQ, it's only about 5 minutes in
the real world.
In this real world.
Exactly. So yeah, dude, I don't know. I mean, like, you know, we've talked about Comic-Con a lot. I've talked to you about the HQ before, but I don't know, man. I love the world. I love the whole world of Comic-Con. I'm a nerd myself, specifically about video games and technology. Like, those are my two biggest things that I just nerd out about. If I get on a plane, I'm buying Popular Science and Xbox Magazine. I want to know where the world is going in those directions, you know?
Sure.
And so, you know, and our fans have been so cool down at Comic-Con for so many years. And but there's a few things that have always kind of, you know, I don't know, like, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel in any way, but I just kind of want to try and do things with a little bit of a different spin or a different take or whatever. And, like, you know, we'll go and do our panels, for example, and you know, and the panels are awesome. And there's, like, you know, the first year we had a couple thousand people and they were super, the show had not even been on the air at that point. They played the pilot and we got a standing ovation. I was like, oh, I can't, they care. I felt like Sally Field, you know, but of course I realized that everyone in that audience was there primarily because of Adam Baldwin and Firefly and, you know, and it's the Whedonites who are just incredible and they will follow you for the
brown coats
entirety. Totally, man. Just incredible. So, and then the years built. And we got to do it like in a bigger hall. And, you know, we had like, I don't know, last year we had about 6,000 people or something like that. And you feel like a Beatle at Shea Stadium. I mean, it's like, that's the kind of, you know, when you're on a nerd kind of relevant show or programming and they're there and they're cheering, it's incredible.
It must be like what it feels like to be Larry the Cable Guy and performing for a bunch of racists.
That's true. Oh, come on. He's a nice guy.
Oh, I know. He's nice.
Jeez.
His fans. They're not.
Stop talking about his fans.
Yeah.
Okay, I change
Chris
it.
Hardwick.
Wait, let me change it. Larry the Cable Guy.
Alienation Hour.
You know what? I'll tell you what, because I do know that Larry the Cable Guy does stay hours after shows and sign autographs for his fans. I'm going to change it to Jeff Dunham. I'm going to switch it and change it.
Because that makes it so much better.
Yeah, no, fuck that.
Well, he's a dick.
That makes it better.
I can get behind that.
But you know, doing the panels, I always just kind of like the moderators that we have for our panels and stuff. They're great. Like, really, Damon Lindelof moderated one year for us, and
Damon's great.
Alan Sepinwald, and like some really great people. But it always kind of bummed me out because, you know, you do this whole panel and then it's like, all right, now there's 5 minutes for fan questions. And there's 20 people at least at that point lined up and they're just dying to ask everybody a question, whatever. And a lot of these questions could have been asked and answered in the same way, you know, from the moderator. It could have been a similar question.
This is for Adam Baldwin. Do you still talk to Chris Makepeace from My Bodyguard?
No. I mean, I don't know. I'm just assuming. I don't know. It's been years, you know. I think they were both 11 when they did that movie.
They were very
young. You ever see a sweaty Stephen Baldwin walking around Comic-Con?
Right. No.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not. No. He's not Adam Baldwin's not a Baldwin brother.
No, he's not. No, no. Often, it's a misconception. Often, people might think
he's a Baldwin brother within his own family, probably.
Sure.
But he is not the Hollywood Baldwins.
No. Hollywood Baldwin.
Not related to Alec and at all.
Okay.
E-T-A-L.
And the rest.
At any rate, you know, there's very limited time for fans to ask questions. And, you know, like when you do interviews or whatever, like more often than not, you're getting asked questions from a reporter or you're getting asked questions from a moderator on a panel. Mm-hmm. But fans don't get that access often. They don't get that chance to just like have an hour where they can have a free for all and I mean, not go crazy and ask you about your personal life and dating habits and stuff like that, because that's pointless.
Excuse me, Zachary Levi, could you describe your dick slit, please?
Well, it's kind of oblong.
Why are you using Ryan Reynolds' voice?
Call back, Ryan, call back. It's a callback, Ryan Reynolds. It's a callback.
He was spotted outside of Comic-Con last year.
We have to find him.
We should. He He'll be back. So I wanted to give people this place at the Nerd HQ. I wanted to do panels where fans had a whole hour of Q&A where it was all for them. And simultaneously, one of the other things I learned about the panels at Comic-Con was that, you know, where we get ushered off the stage when our panel's done, I just assumed everyone in that hall was ushered out and then the new crowd for the new panel would come in. But no. If you wait and you get that seat in the beginning of the day, you get to keep that seat all day long. Mm-hmm. And so people, and I never realized that every time we did a Chuck panel, there might have been half the crowd there that actually wasn't even there for us. They were waiting for
something way down the line,
True Blood after us or something like that, you know? So it that kind of bummed me out a little bit for the sake of all the actual Chuck fans or fans of whatever a show that really wanted to be in those seats for that panel, but couldn't get it because somebody was, you know, squatting on it.
That is kind of a flaw. That is kind of a
bummer.
Flaw.
It's kind
that
of a bummer.
Leads to pen stabbing.
But I'll tell you what,
dude,
though.
How gnarly was that?
I moderated that panel where that happened.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
We were the next panel, and they came backstage, and they're like, everyone go back up to the green room. There was a stabbing. We're like, what?
At Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, with like a broadsword or a mace or a morning star?
Klingon battle.
Yeah. No. But I will say the upside to it is a few years ago, my friend Mike Furman and I were on a panel, and all the people had squatted it because the next panel they were showing the Buffy episode Once More with Feeling, the musical Buffy episode.
Oh yeah.
And so we did our, you know, our nerdy songs about like pie and dinosaurs and whatever. And
like we do.
And we destroyed because all those people were there to see a musical comedy episode of Buffy. And so no one else would have come to our panel otherwise because they didn't really know who we were. And so that from that standpoint, it helps. But it does kind of suck, like you said, when other people want to see stuff and they can't.
Yeah. I'd call your experience with the songs a happy accident.
That was a very happy accident.
Very fortuitous. And again, you know, look, I know the guys at Comic-Con, guys and girls who run the show down there, they're doing their darndest. I mean, it's a major, major, giant thing, and it's just gotten bigger and bigger. And look, and fans get an incredible opportunity now that Hollywood is as infused as they are with the stars that come down and all that stuff, and that's awesome. But as kind of feeling like I'm a nerd myself, like I sit back and I go, well, what would I want? You know, like what can we do? What can we do to try and, you know, give some different opportunities and stuff like that? And then, so I rented this venue down in downtown San Diego at Jolt and Joe's, and it's three big rooms. And one of the rooms is going to be dedicated just to doing panels all week long, you know, from Thursday to Sunday, having people like Seth Green and Zach Quinto and, Dominic Monaghan and Scott Bakula. I think Aisha Tyler is going to do Bakula, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd sit in there just asking him about Quantum Leap for hours.
Fucking A, right? Do you think that fucked with his head? And when he sees himself in the mirror, he still is like, but do I look like a pregnant lady to everybody else?
Exactly.
I think during,
even if he hadn't done the show, he might be having.
Yeah, could fucking get during back. Okay, this is the Zach Levi challenge. If during his panel with the Scott Bakula, don't tell him, if you could get Dean Stockwell to appear in the back and go, "Ooh, Sam, you got to finish this. Ziggy says you got to finish this panel." Like, that would be.
But have no, like, tell everyone beforehand not to acknowledge.
Don't acknowledge Stockwell. Like,
yo, we can't see Stockwell. Yeah. You can't see him. We can only
you
see
you could
Santa.
Fuck with him. So that could be a whole show of just Stockwelling Scott disappear.
Oh, my God.
Sam, you're not supposed to order the tuna fish. Ziggy says there's a 92% chance you should get the pizza.
What the heck? This is gold. This needs to be done. Yeah. Let's do it.
Matt Myra's folded over. laughing.
We'll do it on Funny or Die.
92%.
Yeah.
That made the bit authentic.
Yeah.
That made it authentic.
It's in the details, Chris. It's all in the details.
Exactly. What's your trade? Did you study theater or comedy, or what was your sort of background before Chuck?
I mean, yeah, it was theater. I mean, I would just grow up as a big theater nerd, man. I in middle school on, basically, like, you know, just theater, more theater. High school, you know, my freshman year of high school, I don't even know if I left the drama department. Like, I would eat my snack there. I'd have lunch there. Like, all my friends were there. You know, it was our little hole that we all were back in. And then, you know, playing like Magic the Gathering. Like, I don't even, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That kind of stuff. And then the end of my freshman year, after doing every possible production I could do, it was summertime. And I grew up in Ventura, California. So you'd think, oh, the beach, like go and surf. No, not me. I was like, what other theater can I find? And my grandma was reading some article in the paper in the Ojai Art Center. Ojai is like a half an hour inland from Ventura.
Yeah.
And their little community theater was doing Oliver. And so me and my younger sister, who's here with me today, my grandma drove us both up there. We did Oliver. And then we got involved with that theater for a long time.
Who did you play in Oliver?
Well, it's complicated, Chris. I was the understudy to the Artful Dodger.
I played Oliver in grade school.
Did you really?
Yeah. Oh. Memphis, Tennessee.
Did you grow up in Memphis?
I did.
Oh, rock and roll, man.
Not really.
No?
Actually, there is rock and roll there.
Yeah, there is a lot of rock and roll. Come on. I mean, I think that literally makes sense, what I just said. Yeah. And you totally shut it down.
I'm so sorry.
I mean, it's a great show. It's a lot of fun. And then I was just kind of involved in that world for a long time. And it was doing that. I mean, you know, back in high school, like I kind of slowly like, you know, blossomed a bit and played some sports and, you know, became friends with people outside of the drama department. But I kept doing theater, obviously, and then I was doing some community theater play in Ojai, or I was doing Marvin's Room, which they made a movie about with Leonardo DiCaprio and Susan Sarandon, blah, blah, blah.
He won an award for that, didn't he?
De Niro.
I don't know. DiCaprio, you mean?
The De Niro sketch that they did on SNL. Was there talks about Marvin's Room. So fucking funny.
Is it good?
They're like, is the De Niro talk show.
Right.
Or the Joe Pesci show.
Right.
And the Joe Pesci show.
Comes out as De Niro.
Oh, nice.
Marvin's Room. I heard things. I heard things about Marvin's Room.
It's a good show. It's a really good show.
So and you played the room.
So I did. Yeah, so I played the room. Yeah, and then there was like 30 people there that night. And like with community theater, you go out after the end of the show and shake hands in the lobby. Thanks for coming. You know. And this little woman who was like 4 foot nothing, her name was Maria Comfort. And she was like, she was like a retired manager from the late 70s, early 80s. And she grabs me and she goes, "You got it, kid. You got it. I want to help you." And I had nothing going. I was like, "Yeah, I'll take all the help I can get." And she got me to a manager who got me to a casting director who got me to, you know, a great agency. And then that was about 10 years ago, and the rest is history. So
wait, so you were in high school when this happened?
I was just graduated. So I was about like, I think I was 18 when I was doing that show. It was 1999. So I was 18. And that fall I signed with, my agent at that point. So it was a course of like, you know, maybe like 7-8 months. And
wow.
Yeah, it was really amazing. I was so blessed. Like just doors opening left and right. And, you know, and I had buddies that had graduated high school before me that were like down, pounding the pavement, doing extra work. Like, really, it's a tough business. You know, you didn't try to get a foot in the door and doing mass mailings and submissions and stuff. And
was there any resentment from them? Did you feel?
They never call me back. I don't know if that. No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that everyone was just kind of, you know, they were happy for me. They were excited, and all of my friends knew that's just what I did. You know, I was the friend who acted. I wasn't the friend who you'd go watch, you know, hit a home run. Although I tried my darndest.
In a performance.
Yeah.
Zachary Levi knocks it out of the park. You remind me of an awkward joke moment that I had once. I mean, as a comic.
Did it also involve Yvonne Strahovski in a video game?
No. It involved talking to, like, I was at a party and there was a bunch of theater people there, and one of them said, you know, we're just theater nerds. And I go, the filter didn't catch me in time. I was like, you mean gay people? Yeah. And it just didn't fly.
Come on,
that's
a great joke.
Like, no, it did not go well.
I wish that people would have a little bit more of a sense of freaking humor, man.
So a lot of theater people don't have a sense of humor.
Well, they got so much. And I'm in high school. I remember like there was so few theater kids I knew. And
there are funny theater. There's like funny theater people. And then there are the ones that are just like, you try to fuck around, like joke around, and it's just a wall. Like, well, it's there's like not, a, it's yeah. not getting in.
Remember the theater kids hung out with the goth kids. And so they were both up for grabs when it came to making fun of them.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, I had a ton of theater kid friends. And so I just found that, you know, half of them were incredibly serious, and the other half maybe drifted into stand up or drifted into other form.
Yeah, and some of them. I mean, I have friends that I used to do, you know, theater with back in high school that don't have anything to do with entertaining in any way, shape, or form. Like, you know, they went to go work some job as a scientist.
They work for Jeff Dunham. Yeah, get out of fuck you guys.
I'm detecting some resentment. No,
I don't know. I even know the guy. I don't know the fuck I'm shitting on him for.
You know, it's weird though, if you think about it, like someone that did theater.
Okay.
If someone did like theater growing up and then they didn't go on to, you know, act for a living, there's like, I always talk to people who are just like, it's like, oh, well, that's a bummer. They just kind of lost their dream. But it's like, you know, you talk to people who played sports in high school that didn't go on to play professional sports, and no one goes, oh, that's a shame, huh?
Yeah.
Really good at soccer.
Yeah.
And then nothing. Just got a job.
You know, but I do feel that too. Like, there were people that I knew in college that I thought were fucking hilarious. And then you run into them and they just had, you know, like they didn't pursue anything, and that's whatever. If that wasn't in them, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I always did feel a little like, oh, you're so funny. Why aren't you being funny for money?
Yeah.
Be funny for money, man.
Funny for money.
Like, the funniest guy I knew growing up, Aaron DeLoach, he, like, our whole plan, we would always talk about like going out here and writing and like doing stand up. And then he just started like a moving company and stuck around back in Hawaii.
But that, they move things so hysterically.
It's really hysterically funny.
I mean, it's like, where do you want this lamp, lady? Oh,
it's from the Ming Dynasty. Yeah. Thanks for calling. Ha ha, Hawapalua. He's from Hawaii.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, rock and roll.
So I put ha ha on there.
No, actually, not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all rock and roll.
You can roll.
Hawaiian.
Where'd you grow up?
Ventura. In Ventura.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, right. Ohio.
We jumped around. No, well, I grew up in Ventura. I did theater in Ohio, so it was like a little second home growing up. But
Ohio's snazzy.
It's really artsy fartsy up there. It's a cool little town, and you know, but again, it's a little town. There's not, you know, there's a lot of kind of artistic ventures and things, and like Libby Bowl is a really cool place where you can go watch Shakespeare in the park in the summertime, and they have a lot of good live music and all that jazz. Wow, man, I feel very punny today, and I don't even know why.
It's just coming out naturally.
It is.
It's good though. It's good. Did you ever do stand up?
I did. Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done stand up a couple of times. I grew up just like addicted to stand up. I loved stand up. We had HBO, like a lot of kids did growing up, and I remember, like, in my parents, it was also like, you know, when the television became your babysitter, and but your parents didn't monitor how it babysat you. So me and my sisters would sit there and watch like some of the gnarliest crap on HBO. And my dad was working, my mom was doing something, and we're like, yeah, whatever. And a lot of times, if I had the TV to myself, I'd sit there and watch like the A-List. Like, I loved stand-up comedy. I loved it. And, and I had this really, I had a really awkward moment at like a, it was like an open house at my elementary school. When we were living in Washington State at the time, there were like these comedian musicians that were doing this thing to, you know, entertain the teachers and parents. And my friends all knew me as like the funny kid who sang songs. And so when the guys were like, hey, anybody want to come up here and tell a joke? My friends were like, go on, Zach, go do it, do it. And I'm not going to get into the details of it, not at least on this podcast, but it was, to say the least, one of the most horrendous experiences of my entire life.
Give us an example. One joke. You were a kid.
No, I can't. Look, I'll just say this. And to this day, I will say, I think that, you know, one of the amazing things about comedy, at least for me, is that there should be, I mean, obviously there's rules, or there should be some boundaries, but not really. You know, that's one of the things that you could joke about everything or anything.
Right.
And I also kind of feel like there are some rules and boundaries that are put on certain comics because of the color of their skin or whatever, where one comic can get away with one joke, but another comic can't. And I kind of feel there's a weird, I feel like there's a weird unfairness in that sometimes, you know? However, when I was a kid, I didn't totally understand that.
Did you go on stage in blackface?
I did not go on stage. No. However, I did.
Saying? It's not fair that black people can go on stage in blackface.
No.
But me as a white comic, if I do it.
Right. That would be horrible. That'd be like Ted Danson at the BET.
Oh, my God. The worst.
It was bad. No. Like, I'll just say this. Look, I really loved Bill Bellamy at that point. Like, I watched a lot of his stuff, and he had a joke that only Bill Bellamy or, you know, could tell. And I told that joke and nobody, I was looked at. I don't even think anybody really got the joke. I don't think anybody looked at me like, oh my God, I can't believe that came out of his mouth. I think that I was, you know, 10 mm-hmm. and they thought, who is this stupid little 10-year-old? And I dove off the stage. I hid underneath the stage and I cried. For like 10 minutes, and I could hear my friends are all going, get out of here, and I could hear the comedian musicians like stepping up onto the stage above me, picking up the mic, you know, like it was a nightmare. I'm like, I
surprised you ever performed again.
Can't believe I did this. And then when I did this show called Less Than Perfect, which was the sitcom on ABC, and a couple of the Sherry Shepherd was on the show with me, and we became really good friends. And she had another comic friend named Bone, who was a really funny black comic. And they both were like, "Why don't you do stand up? You're really funny. You should do stand up." And I said, "Look, you need to know why I don't do stand up." And I told them this story, and they laughed their asses off. They thought it was so funny, and they said, "You need to forget about that. You need to go and work out like 10 minutes. Just work on 10 minutes. And so I did that, unbeknownst to me, while I'm working out this 10 minutes, they had set up a gig in like Fullerton and kidnapped me and brought me to this like open mic out there. And the three of us all did stand up together, and I got over my fear of it and had a really good time. And then I ended up doing about, you know, 4 or 5 other little gigs, small open mics. And I never bombed, but I also never knocked it out of the park. It was always like, it was good, you know, but I never really had my own voice. And as a comic, you have to have your voice.
But that takes years.
I know. I've heard that from so many people, and I know that it just takes, you know, practice and getting up on stage. But I don't know. Like, I have so much respect for such insanely talented comics like Seinfeld and like Eddie Izzard. Like, I think Eddie Izzard is one of the smartest, most genius stand-ups. And I look at what he does and I go, I don't think I can ever do that good, you know? And yeah. So it kind of keeps me from ever jumping back into it, but
it's just one of those things where you just have to do it a shitload.
Yeah.
And it's unrewarding for like the only reward for a large part of the time, especially when you're first starting out, is just that you're doing it.
Yeah.
Process. And that it's the process, and you're like, okay, this, you know, like this nugget from this thing works, so I'll throw all this other stuff away. I mean, it's a constant recalibration process.
Yeah. And a lot of lying to yourself. I think this is gonna work out.
But there is nothing. I challenge any profession to top the non-lethal, because it's obviously, you know, it's not like being a crab fisherman, but to try to top what it feels like to bomb when you're a comic, you know, like there's nothing else that can feel that bad in any other profession as going up on stage in front of a bunch of strangers, throwing a bunch of saying, "This is who I am," yeah, and having them reject you.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I mean, you're already in a dark place. I mean, you're doing stand up. You're already in a dark place in your life.
I need validation.
But what's great is that if you can get past that and you can make constructive things happen as a result of that, then it really, you know, it kind of makes you, I mean, it's funny that I get nervous around people sometimes when I'm like, I can get up, I can talk, I can perform in front of 5,000 people. Not that many people have ever come to my shows, but I can perform for 5,000
people.
Okay, five. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when I was opening at Madison Square Garden, it's funny that I still, on an interpersonal level, can still get uncomfortable around people sometimes. And
yeah, but it's different. You know, you're communicating when you're communicating one-on-one. That's a different thing than communicating to a mass of people. You know, that's one of the things I've always found odd. Or, I mean, I felt a little more comfortable now, but like doing talk shows, like I never, you know, you're talking to a person, but you also have a live audience and you have cameras on you. So you don't know, like, well, what's the level of communication I'm going at? Because if you keep it real quiet and it's just like you and whomever, you know, that you're talking to, then that's not really interesting for the audience or the cameras. And if you're trying to like make it real big for the audience, then you look like an awkward ass and next to whoever's interviewing you and everybody.
I often fall into that category.
Trust me, I do too. That's part of the reason why I still struggle with it.
I'm doing Conan for the first time.
Dude, congrats. That's awesome.
Thanks.
He's super nice.
I'm excited about it because I'm a huge fan.
Oh, dude, he's so funny.
Stand up.
What?
Are you doing panel?
I'm just doing panel. Yeah, I'm just doing panel. I'm just doing panel. It's no big deal. Wait, but I'm nervous about it.
What do you mean? You mean like sit down?
Yeah, sit down.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome, man. He's super funny and irreverent. That's one of the things I've loved about him. You know, through the years, it's like he doesn't take things too seriously, and he's willing to have a good time. And
he's a Harvard boy.
Is he a Harvard guy?
He's a big time Harvard guy. Like he's king like
the
shit.
Harvard, the Harvard guy.
Like Lampoon.
Oh wow.
Yeah, he's pretty fucking smart.
He's the original BJ Novak.
That was eloquent.
BJ Novak. Pretty fucking smart. A smart person would come up without a word, but they fucking smart. Do you have any good celebrity fail stories where you met someone that you're like, oh my God, I love this person so much, and then you try, and then it's just like it just didn't come out right?
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever had that as much as like you know, like I met in the course of one night, this last Golden Globes, because Tangled that I got to do a voice in was nominated, and so I got to go to a couple of these like Golden Globe and Oscar parties and stuff, and that was a lot of fun. And I got to meet some really cool people. I met Tom Hanks, who's like my idol. And I got to talk to him for like a good 15 minutes. And that was one of the coolest experiences of my life. And there was no like real awkward fail moment. But like a couple nights before that, or, you know, I don't know, somewhere in that kind of award season, you know, parties and stuff, I was at a party I almost said his name. So John Hamm is there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'd met him once before. And I think he's a super talented guy and obviously does, you know, really well. And he's also a really nice guy. And we were talking and I called him. I have a friend named Tom Hamm.
What?
I do. I have a friend named Tom Hamm. And in my head, I had a couple cocktails. In my head, I had just totally inversed it because I knew a Tom Hamm and clearly this guy's name is Tom Hamm. And so I called him Tom Hamm like five times until he finally very politely says, "It's John, but it's okay." And I go, "No, I know.
Then your story sounds bullshit.
It totally sounds like crap. I didn't even tell him. I was about to say, no, you don't understand. I have a friend named Tom Hamm. That's you don't.
Oh, you didn't do the intense Lance Armstrong grade backpedaling. You're like, let's call Tom Hamm right now. Look, he's right here on my phone. Tom Hamm is with one M though, and it's crazy.
So take a picture of your birth certificate. Send it over to me, and I'll fax it over.
John, can I have your fax number?
Yeah, that was that was not great. And then, is there an actress name? I think Lucy Punch, is that her name? She's a really funny, I think a British actress. And she was in, not Date Night, but she was in the Steve Carell movie with Paul Rudd, Dinner for Schmucks.
Yeah.
So both of those movies kind of came out around the same time, both starring Steve Carell. And again, and this is the same night. And I'm like, and I go up to her, I'm like, and this is on the heels of the Tom Hamm incident. And I go, I say, you were great in Date Night. And she was not in Date Night. She was in Dinner with Schmucks. And I'm like, you are just so funny. You were great in Date Night. And she goes, yeah, I'm not in Date Night. Maybe Dinner with Schmucks. And it's like, no, yes, that's what I, and I almost just, like, you know, like just threw everything out of my hands right at that moment and just walked out. I was
that's
like,
right. That's where you just hit her in the face and run away. Like, you're so nervous. You're just
you're in Date Night. All right.
I don't need a third strike. I'm out of this party. I'm out of here.
Then they
escort you out. Just felt like a bad joke. I was like, I'm that guy. I'm that guy who is totally, who doesn't know anything that he's talking about right now. God, I'm an ass. Such an ass.
I'm going to go over here and talk to Hal Pacino.
No.
Oh, Hal. What the fuck? Oh, I can't get anything right.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that idea of you at a party with a bunch of famous people just systematically like one person at a time.
Yeah. Next time I'll do it and it'll be a decision and I'll have a camera rolling and it'll be like a punk show. It'll be great instead of just me being an ass.
Tom Hamm, I love your show Made Men.
What do you guys make, though? I don't get the premise.
Is it, you guys, like a factory?
Doesn't seem like a mob show.
I mean, that Mad Men. I really wanted to come back. It's not coming back till next year.
Yeah, but Breaking Bad starting, though. Yeah. So
Breaking Bad.
To look forward to.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Is there anything you're watching? Do you have time to watch anything right now? Is there anything that you've been watching recently?
No, you know, not as of late, although I should be catching up with DVDs of all these shows that I've never seen that are apparently incredible, like The Wire. Like, I can't tell you how many people have nearly...
I haven't jumped on The Wire train yet either, just because I know that it's a fucking commitment.
Yeah. Well, I think almost any show is. Almost any of those shows, at some level, you're looking at, you know, even on cable, it's a 12 episode season, and if you don't start till 3 episodes in, that's a lot of hours. That's, you know,
it is, but I know that's one of those shows where you start watching one episode and then 5 hours later you've watched, you know, and I just, I haven't had the time to, you know, I recommend a show called Misfits. It's a British show called Misfits.
I feel like I might've bought that on DVD. I think somebody actually told me.
Thank you.
Is it an older show?
No, it's new. It's, they're only, they've done two seasons, or series as they call them. A series of six episodes.
Yeah.
They just do six episodes, Zach. They don't give a shit.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because they're civilized, mate.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, by the way, I was not in date night. I'm very sorry.
Yeah, no.
Sorry.
But cheers.
Cheers.
And have a great evening.
Do you like to suck my fanny? That means vagina.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right.
I'm from England.
Damn it. Fish and chips. Chips and fish. I'll have some chips and fish.
I pulled a real Zach Levi there.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Oh, I'm going to be that example. Oh, shit. Like someone pulled a Homer Simpson. Yeah. His name becomes synonymous.
Yeah, right.
I want to get Munson down in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Oh, jeez.
That's fun. So what? When does Nerd HQ start? Does it start Thursday?
Right. So thank you for bringing that back
around. Yeah, no. I want to make sure people,
my partner in the Nerd Machine, which is the company I started, which is just t-shirts and fun stuff for nerds. And although we want to build more, I want to do cool hardware and software and ways to play like first person shooters on your iPhone without covering half your screen with your thumbs, things like that.
It all has to be controlled by your brain.
And all controlled by your brain. Or genitalia. I mean, who knows? It's a brand new world.
Oh my God.
Hello.
Guys, we're going to start boner games.
it's one touch swipe. I mean, think about it.
Exactly.
So Nerd HQ, it's going to be the entire run of Comic-Con. So I think, for the panels and stuff, people are buying all those online, and we'll have right next door to Jolt and Joe's, we all got another little building so people can come in and get all their registration packets and all that stuff for the panels. But the HQ is free to come in. So Xbox is one of our main sponsors, and we've basically turned the entire downstairs into a mini E3. Mm-hmm. You can play the Gears 3 Horde demo. You can play the Gears 3 multiplayer demo. You can play new Batman, new really? Kinect. There's going to be all kinds of fun for people to come by and
That's going to be packed with nerds.
I know, right?
That's
What I kind of look at the Nerdiverse as having this triple crown. I think I've told you about it. It's like, Comic-Con is the entertainment world, E3 is the gaming world, and CES is the tech world, but most people can only afford to go to one of them, and they really have to make a commitment. It's like, I'm going to Comic-Con.
And CES also isn't, CES is really more for business people. It's not as consumer friendly, I don't think.
It's got a little less sex appeal, but I feel like it could. I mean, look, to me, I look at what happens at CES, and it is a little more fluorescent light and, the kind of the whole nine. But the stuff that comes out of there is unbelievable. Like the stuff that could be in your home next month or next year or right now, depending on whatever their, the tech is that they have at the show. Like, when 3D monitors were first hitting the market and being able to look at that stuff and go, oh my God, this is coming. Instead of being somebody that is just reacting to as technology rolls out, like be at the forefront and go, oh my gosh, I want to track with this. Because for me, working in the world of entertainment, I want to bring all that stuff together. I want to make, if you know that 3D technology is coming, to be ahead of the curve and go start making that 3D content before it comes. Obviously, we're now there, but
I think inductive charging, that's what I saw at CES, and it got very little play. There's a company that was making inductive chargers and then also printable electronics. So that you could print out basically, and you can run current through it. And,
no way.
And so you had these cereal boxes that were had the animated Honey Nut Cheerios bee on it, and they were being charged.
Cereal's already very expensive.
I know. Yeah. I mean, these were $400 boxes of cereal, but worth it. No, it's just totally cheap, and they can print. The ink is you can print it out, and then it's inductively charged on the shelving.
Yeah, yeah.
And then ideally, if you had the NFC technology, the near field communication technology, you would never have to take a card out to pay for anything. You would go to the store, see your animated boxes, put them in a bin or basket, and then walk out, and then automatically, that's. Like the less action that I'm sure.
So you're saying I could thumb $100 to save the clock tower.
Yes.
Very soon.
Very, very soon.
Yeah.
Today.
Save the clock tower.
$100
I saw like this thing. Oh, hold on. Let me finish on Nerd HQ, and then I want to get back to technology because I love technology. July 21st to 24th. It's going to be going the whole time. Doors open at 9 a.m. every day, and then there's going to be, you know, just things going on all day and all night. You know, it's a full restaurant bar, so I want people to, if they're going to come and eat and drink somewhere, like come by there and come game and hang out and see your friends. And I'm going to be down there interacting as much as I can. You know, I mean, obviously it's kind of my baby, and I want people to feel welcome and cool. And then there's going to be panels going on the whole time with some of the people that I mentioned. There's the Firefly panel. It's sold out already. It sold out in like an hour. It was unbelievable, but
that's not surprising.
It's not surprising at all. Yeah. And I'm going to do a panel. I think like Kevin Smith is going to do, he and I are going to do like a live podcast panel at some point. I think Aisha Tyler might come by and do some podcast stuff. I just want there to be a place where there's a refuge for the industry types that come down, because it can get a little crazy sometimes. And you just want a place where you can go and have a drink and, you know, be eating a burger with mustard coming off your face, and you don't have somebody in your face with a camera like, oh, I captured that. It's going to go all over Twitter. You know, yeah. You just need that little bit of a protected area. But also I wanted it to be this kind of fun workplace co-op space where anybody could come down and be like, you know, the power of social networking is insane. So we'll have just some tables that are there. And if anybody at any point is like, oh, dude, I got a half an hour to kill and I've, you know, had a drink and I ate some food. Hey, I'm going to do a half an hour signing, you know, right now at Nerd HQ, come by. And just based on that, just see how many people come, and you can sign for your fans in a half hour and be like, okay, cool, thanks everybody, and go back and have another cocktail.
That's awesome. That's something I think Comic-Con's always needed, is to kind of get away from the convention center and to kind of take over the town, because it's such a, there's so many awesome restaurants and bars in that area, and it could be more like
South by Southwest.
Exactly.
I totally agree.
You're walking around the town, and the town, I'm sure, would like it even better.
Yeah. I think the downtown San Diego Gaslamp area is so cool. You can walk everywhere. There's a lot of great restaurants and bars and things like that. And what's that?
Pokies.
Oh, Pokies? Is that a good spot?
It's a great Mexican restaurant.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's a little off, but you can walk there.
I mean, Dick's Last Resort actually, our building is right on the backside. So like the whole, you know, we kind of look down in Dick's Last Resort's little outdoor area there. And then, you know, there's like another spot called the Tipsy Crow. That's a really cool little British pub.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Analog. And we're actually on Thursday. That just reminded me. God, I should have bullet points for this stuff, but I ramble too much.
No, it's perfect.
We're going to do a treasure hunt. So we're going to have this smartphone treasure hunt where you start at the Nerd HQ, you scan an M tag, and then that brings you to a website that gives you like a multiple choice question. You got to answer right. And then you get a clue to the next spot in the treasure hunt, right? So again, I'm not reinventing the wheel. People have been doing stuff like this, but I love treasure hunts. In fact, treasure hunts are like wave runners. I don't know anyone who doesn't like a good treasure hunt or a jet ski. You know what I mean?
I would like to reinvent the wheel. How do you feel about squares?
Depends on how the roads are formed.
It's a rough ride,
Chris. If there
are
notches in the roads, then they could just kind of roll. We'll get into that.
God damn it.
Yeah. But the treasure hunt component will, like, there's like eight stops or whatever, but along the way, and by the way, the prizes are like, you know, like a, you know, brand new Xbox 360 or, you know, controllers of games and all that kind of stuff, you know, maybe even a couple passes into the nerd party, which I'm throwing on Friday night for all the industry folks that come by. So if you're there, I would love for you guys to come.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'll come by. Might already be RSVP'd.
Holy shit. I am RSVPing right now.
Oh, in your pants?
Yep, that's right.
Are you wearing your cum diaper?
I'm wearing my cum diaper. I'm making an invitation. I'm making a boner-shaped invitation.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Why did I even go back to your party?
No, it was perfect. Everything's full circle there. You know?
I know, right? But along the path of the treasure hunt, there's a scavenger hunt component. So even if you win the treasure, like if you're the first one across the finish line for the treasure hunt, you don't win. You get, you know, so many points based on your position. But then along the way, if you go like take a picture with your phone of a Wookiee, then it's like 100 bonus points. If you take a picture with Chris Hardwick, that's 500 bonus points.
Holy shit.
If you cross the finish line with said Wookiee, that's like 1,000 bonus points. And if they kidnap your sorry ass and bring you across the finish line, maybe they just win the race entirely.
What if they cross the finish line with a Wookiee and the Wookiee takes his head off and it's me?
That's mind-melting right now.
That's like Time Cop when the two Van Dams touch each other.
That's exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
So don't let your future self be a time paradox.
I love the premise of Time Cop.
Same matter cannot occupy the same space.
Nope.
But can't it?
Wait, didn't that? Isn't that what?
Do you have a time
Jack?
Machine?
Is that what happens in Free Jack?
I don't know. I haven't watched Free Jack since I was a child.
Emilio Estevez, the guy from the Rolling Stones.
Mick Jagger,
the guy from the Rolling Stones.
We have to free all these Jacks. Mick, cut. That's not. We're not freeing anyone named Jack. Right then.
We got it. We can't let it through the labyrinth.
Does anyone have a drink? So this is about playing the game Jacks. No, Mick. Mm. Did you read the script? No. Just showed up.
I wrote a song for the soundtrack.
Right. I'm the free Jack.
That's all I came up with. I'm a free Jack.
By the way, if that's what Mick Jagger's saying, that would be enough.
Yeah, it would be.
Just repeat.
Point.
Just put that on loop. Just, I'm a free Jack.
Free Jack attack.
Free Jack.
For still making it happen. Still making it happen.
Is he though? Is he? Emilio.
Emilio Estevez.
Night of the Roxbury.
Emilio.
Underrated movie. Emilio Estevez has directed Men at Work. Men at Work is a good movie. Him and Charlie Sheen.
Him and Charlie.
Garbage men surfers trying to start their own surf shop. They get caught up in a murder mystery that goes all the way to the top. It's a good movie. Good movie.
Well, I'm on board because your voice went up at the end.
Yeah.
This is how you sell any pitch. Just Keith start David. Going up with your go voice and it's going to be great.
Chris Hardwick is a Wookiee.
No. So Nerd Issue and then Nerd Machine. Is it nerdmachine.com?
Thenerdmachine.com. Yeah, and that's where you can buy all the panel tickets and all that stuff and buy a t-shirt. Or a hat or a beanie or sweatshirt or jacket or whatever. We have like cool little flash drives or like little Swiss Army knives now, and got fun little iPhone 4 cases that look like old school like cassette tapes. For those of you under the age of 16, a cassette tape was a way that we used to play music in our cars.
Shut
or
up,
homes.
Old person.
When you mixtapes. That's how I used to get denied by girls. Mixtapes.
I just made you a great new mixtape. It's got some Duran.
I'm sorry.
No.
I'm sorry.
A mixtape.
How often have you heard that? I'm sorry.
A mixtape.
Were you the one saying I'm sorry? As you're handing it to them, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
If you never want a girl to call you again, give her a mixtape.
I worked on this all night.
So thenerdmachine.com and there's like forums and chat rooms and stuff that, you know, for people to just hang out and but at the end of the day, I wanted the Nerd Machine to just be like a touchstone for like a nerdolution, as I call it. I want to start a movement. I look at the future of, again, like kind of going back to technology and entertainment and where it's all coming together and where we're all headed together and just start like a really cool dialogue and a relationship with the public and with the fans, because it's all for them. At the end of the day, you know, they're consuming it. So like, I want to make what they want. And I want to appeal to them and say, look, you know, if this goes to a model, like an iTunes model where we're selling stuff, it's not just, you know, you're not getting it for free on your television because of the advertising model, but because you're paying for it, now you have the power's in your hands to keep it on the air. Mm-hmm. If Firefly was being sold for $2 an episode back when it was on the air, that show would still be around. They could make incredible, you know, the episodes that they could go in and the things that we could see now with Firefly and all those brown coats that are bummed that it doesn't exist anymore wouldn't be bummed if they had the power to save it then. And I think by taking things and putting it into that kind of a la carte model where you can buy a half hour of content for 99 cents or an hour of content for $1.99, and you appeal to the people and say, hey, don't pirate it. Don't steal it. You know, if you pay for it, then we can all work together and we can keep making this and enjoy this journey together. Then I think that people are good. You know, I think that people would go for that. I think they retaliate and they resist when you have, like, you know, what happened with the music industry and you have, you know, big labels freaking out and not knowing what to do. And then the feds come in on like a 12-year-old kid in Rancho Cucamonga who, you know, was said, hey, his buddy was like, download this song on Napster, you'll be fine. And then all of a sudden, you know, people are putting him in prison. It's like, then the public revolts and they go, no, you can't do that. You can't, you know, that's the man doing something to them. But if it's a grassroots thing and if it's like there's a dialogue and a conversation and a connection between the worlds, then I think that it can work and it can be awesome. So that's what I want the Nerd Machine to be.
I got a cease and desist letter from the recording industry.
You did?
In like 2001.
Was that when you were making your own album and trying to get it out there?
Please don't register this.
God. Make your own album.
Me and the BMI guys made a decision.
We have enough polka. No more.
But guys.
Matt's album entitled Feelings Pie.
I don't get that.
Happiness pie.
Like happiness pie.
Happiness pie.
Did you think I was making a food reference because you...
Well...
I wouldn't put it past you.
No, it's not. That was not.
Oh, that's messed up, Chris.
It's like it's
free
like,
Jack.
I was not making a food joke, Matthew. Yeah,
kids in
it's
the
like,
hall
it's like Kids in the Hall happiness pie. Everyone gets in a pie.
Yeah.
Someone's a little sensitive today.
Sadness is a barnacle stuck to your bright boat.
Wait a minute. Are you making fun of the fact that I used to be a fish?
Were you?
I don't appreciate your barnacle.
Guys, not in front of company.
Shut up. I want him to see this, oh, you guys. God. This is what I have to live with every goddamn day.
Exactly.
This is
what I was talking about.
You know, all I wanted was transparency this morning, so I feel like I'm getting that. Yeah. I'm getting a good insight.
Well, you're not getting it from the government.
Let's
get started.
Colors shining through. You're gonna have karaoke at Nerd HQ?
I don't know. We were thinking about it. At one point, I was thinking about like how cool would it be if we had like a karaoke. I really wanted like Weezer to play. I wanted to do like
Of course you would.
Well, dude, I don't know. I think big. I'm always like, hey, you know what would be awesome? And then I have, you know, three people around me going, let's rein it in. That's gonna be another $1 million. But yeah, at one point I was thinking how fun it would be if we had like a karaoke machine and we didn't tell anybody Weezer was gonna play. And then I got up on stage. And I was like, hey, everybody, thanks for coming to the, you know, Nerd HQ. And I just wanted to kick it off with a karaoke song. And people would be like, oh, that's kind of lame, whatever. All right. And I start singing like the first, I don't know, few bars of Say It Ain't So. And then all of a sudden you see a curtain drop and Rivers and everybody is like, bow out, you know, just rocking. And everybody goes, oh, my God.
That would be pretty sweet.
Right? Yeah.
Is that more for the fans or for you personally?
Yes. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, but I think, I don't. No, I mean, I think with any idea, you kind of start with, well, what do I think is cool? What do I think would be fun? And then hopefully that applies to the fans and everyone else. And, you know, but I think Weezer, they're probably my favorite band of all time, or certainly of recent history. And certain, you know, and still? Definitely kind of, what's that?
Still?
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, Blue and Pinkerton, I think, you know, just blow doors. They're just incredible albums and so incredibly different, too. Like, it really bummed me out that the critics, you know, harshed on Rivers Mellow so much about Pinkerton that he kind of withdrew. And
that's the thing. That's what bums me out. It's like he kind of doesn't like it.
Yeah, I know. It's a bummer because it's such a great album.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a perfect
album. And Green Album's great. And Maladroit, you know, he's still continued to make great music. But I mean, I not too long ago, like a year ago or something, they came through L.A. and they
did. Did you go to those shows?
Yes.
Did you go to both?
I went to both.
I went to both as well.
I was out of my mind. Yeah,
it was
great. Because I didn't start listening to Weezer when Blue Album when Blue Album came out. Like, I wasn't like going to concerts and stuff like that. Like, I didn't know to go find them and go and see these concerts. So I had never, with the exception of a few shows that I've gone to where they maybe play like one Blue Album song, they never play Pinkerton.
Never play Pinkerton.
And to just be at a show where they go like literally like start to finish. And, you know, like in the end of the Blue Album night when they're playing Only in Dreams and everyone's just going crazy. Yeah. I was
and they
like,
open the back. Like
a, and they open up like the back. A, yeah. The Universal Amphitheater. Yeah. It was so gnarly.
I could have
cool.
used some B-sides, some more B-sides. I would have been appreciative of some if I heard Jamie. Wanted to hear Jamie really
interesting.
Bad. But they did play Suzanne.
Yeah, they did play Suzanne.
But like I was really wanting to hear Jamie, and I just threw out The Love of My Dreams. Like, those are great songs from that era that they didn't play.
Yeah, no. I hear you. And as a Weezer purist, you want to soak up every ounce of that you can.
It's not really ever going to happen again.
Did you see Best Coast, the band that opened for them?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Stark difference from the first time I saw him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a just like an art gallery on Melrose near Virgil, and like they were playing with a couple other bands like the OCs and other local bands.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you know, it was just like a, you know, old indie show. There was like, you know, 10 people there, but the singer was very much different and not together during that time. She was like slurring through every word, and I was like, why? I've heard good things about these guys.
Yeah,
this is god awful, and I couldn't understand what's going on.
Don't sugarcoat it.
How was it really? It was horrible. But then I got the album, and I was like, "This is fucking great."
Yeah,
the album's great, and it was awesome seeing her together and sober on stage.
Yeah, and opening for Weezer. Epic is that?
And then they came out. What song did they sing together? They sang some song together.
Oh yeah. Well, also Jorge Garcia came out and sang a song
with
them
too.
Yeah, he did.
Memories. Right?
No, was it Memories? I thought it was Island in the Sun.
Oh.
No, she came out and sang Island in the Sun.
Yeah.
I think that's what she did. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, oh, that's right. Because they didn't just play Blue and Pinkerton. They played like,
they did, like
down the year.
Down the years.
Down the years,
yeah.
And playing different singles from the different albums.
This Weezer chat has been brought to you by a grant from the Ryan Reynolds App Foundation. Reminding you.
Sorry.
Ryan's got him.
Shut up, Chris.
I'm sorry. You guys,
I really thought
you
fish. You former fish.
Oh, God. I don't make fun of my fishly roots.
Sorry. I thought I was going to know more people at those shows, and I didn't. I was like, it's rare to talk to somebody about it.
Oh, dude. Yeah. It was epic. When are you going to be down at Comic-Con? What's your steez, bro?
I get down on. All right, fucking bro. I'm going to fucking tear some shit up.
Yeah, man.
I got a flyer down there. Stop in Huntington.
I'm moderating. I'm sure I can say all these by the time this podcast goes up, which will be Monday. I'm moderating the Walking Dead panel.
Nice.
I'm moderating Big Bang Theory.
Nice.
And I'm moderating Black Dynamite all on Friday. And then Saturday we're doing our live podcast at 4th and B.
Fantastic.
The first show sold out with the Matt
Smith. Oh, that's right. That was at 11 p.m., right?
8. And then we started an 11 o'clock show. And so the tickets are on. And so I got a tweet from someone this morning. It was like, because we added the 11 o'clock show, and someone goes, $23 and 11 p.m., a little expensive / late for Comic-Con. And I was like, both of the things you said are wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of the things you said. First of all, $23 for a live show, very cheap.
Yeah.
And 11 o'clock, pretty early.
Yeah.
Pretty early on a Saturday night.
By the way, not just early, but what the hell else are you going to do down there? You know what I mean? Like, go. There's. That's a perfect thing to do. Go
you should
do
just respond to with, I'm sorry it messes with your mom's curfew.
Oh, bad ass. Wow, that would have been the mechanical pencil attack of 2011. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Chris, anytime you want to be an asshole towards anyone that tweets you, just let me know and I'll write a few things up.
Okay,
for you.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks.
Just
Jonah.
Jot a few ideas down. Yeah, yeah, you know what? Just do that now. Just have them pre-written.
Yeah, pre-written.
You know?
Well,
I have a friend who has an entire page of like drafted tweets, and they're all pretty hysterical. But I'm like, this is what you do with your free time.
Yeah.
You sit and write these like really funny little quips, just ready to roll out. Like,
yeah, that's
all right. I'll go with that option now.
Rob,
boom,
yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
I wish I had a little more thought into my tweets, but I
don't know. You know, everybody tweets different.
Everyone
poops.
It's the one you think is going to just, you're like, oh, this is going to fucking blow up and get retweeted. And then nothing.
It's like three people. Yeah. I didn't get it.
And then the one you kind of shit out, just like.
I went to follow Michael Keaton thinking it was going to be the greatest comedy experience on Twitter, and
it's not.
He doesn't tweet anything funny at all. He just tweets about having linguine.
Yeah. Like, Jason Walter.
That's funny. Yeah. It's the contrast. See, it's Michael Keaton, the expectation, and then the simplicity of it.
He knows what he's doing.
He knows.
Mr. Mom always knows what he's doing.
Yeah. What,
Jason
dude? Did you ever see Multiplicity? By the way,
yeah, it's a great movie.
I think it's so underrated, man.
Yeah,
he did not get the play that he should have got for that. Playing four like. Totally different guys, and he was so committed. He was so good.
I enjoyed it.
And Andy McDowell's adorable.
And what were you saying about Jason Wallner?
Oh, yeah. Jason Wallner, guy directs Eagle Heart and Human Giant, all those shows.
Did you say Human Gina?
Human Giant.
Oh, okay.
Human,
yeah. Human Gina.
Just checking.
He did some
role. Get some Human Gina.
He always retweets Jamie Ferrara from Entourage, the guy who plays Turtle.
Uh-huh.
And it's always just like retweets and just going, all right. Because it's like all he ever tweets is, this is good cereal. 9:30, y'all. Like the most boring base, like non-tweets, non-anything. Yeah. And you can just imagine that's how it is hanging out with him, where it's just you're hanging out. He's like, oh man, 4:30.
That is a lonely person. I just have to tell someone that it's what time. I just have to tell someone what time it is.
Yeah.
Well, we're at the end of our hour with you, Zachary Levi.
Boo.
But I'm so glad this finally worked out.
Oh, dude, thanks
Please
for having me.
Come back on. I hope everything works out, and best of luck to you.
Thanks, man.
Fighting the good fight, friend. Well, fighting the good fight.
We're all in it together, and let's go kick some ass and change the world. You know, and to do that, go to thenerdmachine.com.
Excellent.
That's my last ditch plug.
Please plug all you want.
Yeah.
This podcast is free. You can plug all you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoy your burrito. I'm going to turn off the CD machine now.
Wait.
Turn off the CD machine.
No, don't.
Holding off the machine. Zach says,
all right, shut it off.
Oh, yeah.
Now leaving nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.